With mounting evidence of militant atrocities and an increasing Al-Qaeda infiltration into the ranks of the armed opposition, many of those who initially wanted reforms in Syria may be asking themselves whether they can trust the foreign-backed militarized opposition. Stay with News Analysis.
In Syria, some of Al-Qaeda's foot soldiers call themselves Jabhat al-Nusra li Ahli al-Sham, which is the Arabic way of saying front for the protection of the Levantine people. Like other Al-Qaeda affiliate groups, Al-Nusra fighters are well-trained, experienced, and battle-hardened from places like Afghanistan and Iraq. Al-Nusra has already claimed responsibility for several attacks against the Syrian army. The group says it increased its assaults on government forces from 7 in March to 66 in June. A breakdown of al-Nusra's attacks in Syria between March and June reveals the following. More than half of the attacks were in the capital Damascus and 20% in Syria's largest city and commercial hub, Aleppo. The terrorists have also operated in Deraa, Deir al-Zor, as well as elsewhere in the country. Al-Qaeda terrorists in Syria use a variety of tactics in their fight against Damascus. In the last 4 months, al-Nusra fighters used ambushing tactics 30% of the time, resorted to assassinations more than 20% of the time, used IEDs and car bombs more than 15% of the time, and kidnapping and suicide bombs represented 8 and 7% of the attacks, respectively. Al-Nusra represents only one group and perhaps a small percentage of fighters in Syria. According to the New York Times, the U.S. intelligence community assesses that terrorists from the Iraqi branch of Al-Qaeda are expanding to Syria. In a video message last February, Al-Qaeda's leader Ayman al-Zawahiri called on militants in Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey to rise up and support what he called their brothers in Syria. Some terrorist forums announced the death of foreign militants in Syria on a frequent basis. Militants from Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Egypt, and even places as far as Chechnya. The authorities in Jordan have arrested a number of terrorists trying to sneak into Syria. Terrorist groups fighting in Syria are well-trained and well-funded. They're often backed with money from states who like to see President Bashar al-Assad gone. States like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey, as well as the U.S. and its Western allies. And that's probably why their presence is encouraged. Take the latest hostage-taking of Iranian pilgrims in Syria. Neither the U.S. nor any of its allies has condemned the kidnapping of the 48 Iranians. Even the United Nations remains silent on the issue. This has given rise to a conviction that terrorists could be good guys if they serve the interest of the U.S. The Al-Qaeda rose from the ashes of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan during the 80s. The group was heavily backed by the U.S. spy agency, the CIA, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan. But at the end, it was the same Al-Qaeda that reportedly carried out the most horrific act of terror inside the United States on 11 September 2001. Is history repeating itself? Will the U.S. support for the same ideology in Syria unfold another tragedy?
Joining me now live from Washington, author and historian Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley. I'd also like to introduce with us from Beirut with the Center for Middle East Studies and Public Relations, Mr. Mufid Jaber, and also with the Baltimore chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. Randy Short, with us from Washington. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on News Analysis. My first question to our guests in Washington, Dr. Tarpley. There was this article I was reading by one British photojournalist, Dr. Tarpley, who was briefly abducted in Syria, and he was saying that he was shocked by the fact that there was not a Syrian in his sight among his abductors and that he was shot by a British militant, that in fact several of his abductees had South London accents. So the question is this actually on the ground a US-led proxy war with all options in play in this quest for regime change, including the option of kidnappings?
Certainly, this has been a terrorist destabilization of Syria from the very beginning. My diagnosis has always been these are death squads. Al-Qaeda and similar groups provide the key personnel for the death squads. They're under NATO control in general. The Saudis, the other reactionary Gulf monarchies provide the money for the weapons, and the recruitment actually has gone on in countries from Morocco all the way to to Pakistan, from Somalia all the way to Chechnya. So this is a destabilization. It's a secret army of the CIA, if you will. And the goal, once again, is to destroy the Syrian state. Recent news reports indicate that the so-called Free Syrian Army, the death squads, are focusing on killing government officials, even if they're in the civil service. The government is targeted. They're also attempting to kill scientists, because these people are also considered to be supporters of Assad. And as we've seen on July 18th, a huge terrorist attack on the Syrian government, killing the defense minister and other top personnel, and now the 50 Iranian pilgrims. So there is no doubt this is terrorism. Al-Qaeda has always been, as you point out, the CIA Arab Legion, and it continues to do this. And the Saudi role, of course, is absolutely critical. This has now been on American television. We have network correspondents north of Aleppo saying that they're talking to rebel commanders, and the rebel commanders say, yes, we have Al-Qaeda here, pictures of the Al-Qaeda flag and so forth. So there is no doubt.
Right. Muslim Mufid Jaber now in Beirut. NBC News reported this past week that the militarized Syrian opposition has now received its first batch of surface-to-air missiles via Washington's NATO ally Turkey. So again, that issue of all options and how much aid or support the United States and its allies, including Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, are willing to give to these militants. But who is Turkey giving these missiles, for example, to? And are they guaranteeing that these missiles are not going to fall into the wrong hands?
On principle, the Turkey and NATO are giving weapons to the Free Syrian Army. But since the Free Syrian Army is not a very cohesive organization, and since the members of the Free Syrian Army are people who have been enlisted into they're not disciplined or professional soldiers, it is very likely that the weapons that have been given by the U.S. and Turkey and their allies to the Free Syrian Army can fall into the hands of different organizations, namely those that are on the extremist spectrum, namely Al-Qaeda and the other extreme Sunni organizations like Al-Qaeda and the Nusra Front.
Right. Well, let's go now to Washington and speak to Dr. Randy Short about this as well. Dr. Short, the CIA, we're hearing, is actively coordinating with a secret command center operated by Turkey, Saudi Arabia and Qatar along the Turkey-Syria border. And that implies, again, that since Al-Qaeda, as our guest there in Washington was saying, has actually been proven to be in Syria operating there, how does this alliance with Al-Qaeda fit into the ongoing U.S. war on terror?
Well, I mean, the war on terror is a farce. It is a way for the rich to steal from the poor, where we can be in perpetual war. So you'll have austerity programs where you'll have 1% of the people have everything and the 99% have nothing. That's one. Al-Qaeda is a U.S. creation. It's almost like a crusader foreign legion. Wherever they want to send them in against a Muslim society, they send them in. And either there's a humanitarian intervention or there's a civil war, and they support it. And the U.S. government is very complicit. If you are following that, the Syrian support group can now raise money directly from Americans to give to Al-Qaeda. So Al-Qaeda is, it's protein. It serves whatever need that they want when they want it.
And Dr. Tarpley, again, some are saying
And this proves when you have
I'll just go to Dr. Tarpley now. I'll come back to you, Mr. Short. Some are saying, Dr. Tarpley, that the U.S. and its allies are doing, as Dr. Short was saying there, what they did in Afghanistan against the Soviets. They created the militants there that then became Al-Qaeda, that then became their enemies. Are they creating another terrorist entity now in Syria? Would you agree with that analysis?
I think, again, the goal is to break up the current Syrian state, go for micro-states, mini-states, failed states, entities of all types, They're accusing Assad of wanting to break up the country, which I think is quite fantastic. The big news, however, today is that, according to some reports, the Syrian government forces have actually captured Turkish and Saudi active duty military officers directing these rebels. So with this, it couldn't be clearer. This is a tentacle of NATO and of the Saudi monarchy, and those officers are on the ground. Now, we've had reports in the past that Syria had captured French officers. I think they would be well advised to show them if this is the case. Mm-hmm. Let world public opinion see what is exactly going on. And of course, with Al-Qaeda, for the whole history of Al-Qaeda, the money has come from Saudi Arabia, right? That's how Osama bin Laden got started in the 1980s as a kind of a bagman or paymaster. Mm-hmm. However, today the question is whether Saudi Arabia can continue to fulfill that role. Aren't the Saudis now looking very overextended? Aren't they facing a blowback from all these revolutions that they have fomented? Yesterday here in Washington, the Washington Post published an article by David Ignatius, who's tied into the State Department, and he quoted Press TV in one of his articles. He says, "Is Saudi Arabia on the brink of a revolution?" And he quoted the remarks made a couple of days ago by Mr. Ali Al-Ahmed on Press TV about the spreading of the rebellion inside Saudi Arabia, how the end of Ramadan will mark an escalation of this, right, and how indeed factions are beginning to form in the royal family that could lead to a destabilization of Saudi Arabia. This would, of course, put a monkey wrench into the NATO plans for Syria.
Right. Well, I'll just actually refer to some reports now that's been spread saying that President Obama signed a secret order earlier this year, and that was when the U.S. was publicly voicing support for Kofi Annan's peace plan. And that signing was about permitting the CIA and other U.S. agencies to provide support that could help the militants oust Assad, according to those reports. Now, Mr. Mufid Jaber, I'd like to put this question to you. Do you think then that based on this, there was initially and originally a concerted effort to disrupt that peace plan that for now, of course, seems very unlikely to work with Kofi Annan resigning?
Initially, the U.S. wanted to make the Syrian government led by President Assad kneel down, but now its goal has changed, and their goal is to effectively remove Bashar al-Assad from power. So, yes, the United States is making a great deal of effort into arming the militants, and its only goal up until this point is to replace the government of Bashar al-Assad with one which would be more loyal to the U.S. as well as the allies of the U.S., namely Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and a government that would be in line with the foreign policy of the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So while the U.S. and the beginning of the conflict, they weren't enthusiastic about arming the opposition, but now we have reached a completely different stage. Now the U.S. are doing as much as they could to provide the Syrian militants with intelligence reports that would allow them to gain the upper hand in this conflict.
Right. So, Dr. Randy Shaw, the question that now comes to mind is there a plan to prolong this war, for this to be a protracted war that's going to rather destroy Syria from within? Or is this plan about the militants and their backers doing all they can to bring the Assad regime down? Which one of these is the ultimate goal?
Before I answer that, I simply want to say that Kofi Annan has been more or less a water boy or a lawn jockey for the imperialist powers, and so I never perceived he would be an honest broker. He was there to buy time as they gathered their forces to destroy the nation of Syria and bring down the regime of Bashar al-Assad. Now, in terms of them having a long-term war, I don't think that they want it. I think that they want to do blitzkrieg. This is why you have tanks. This is why you have missiles. This is why you have planes. And this is why they are arming these people with more sophisticated weapons so they can get rid of the Syrian Air Force, and from there, with an air force and with anti-tank weapons, there would be almost no asymmetrical conflict, as well as putting regular troops on the ground, if you're aware that the Turks have invaded Syria. They have used the excuse that there are Kurdish armed groups protecting their cities as a provocation, so they've crossed the border. The Turkish government uses as an excuse to intervene its fear of there being a Kurdish state, even if it's semi-autonomous. So Turkey doesn't want this thing to be protracted. The United States doesn't want it. They want these people out. So I think there's going to be a big, violent, bloody push.
Okay, and let's have Dr. Tarpley's view on this as well. What do you think, Dr. Tarpley? Would you agree, first of all, that this is going to be not a protracted war, rather, but something very bloody, as Dr. Short was saying there, to bring the Assad regime to an end? And in this situation, do you think a diplomatic solution is even possible? I mean, Washington has been saying, because of the, in their words, intransigence of Russia and China, support for militants is the only means, they say, in which we can save Syria.
Well, the Obama administration finding is that they're supporting the rebellion. And of course, the support really goes far beyond what Obama says, because we do know that CIA and special forces people from the US have been in southern Turkey the whole time, probably a year or more, directing the flow of weapons in. Today, we just had another hysterical outburst from Hillary Clinton. She sounds like a lady in a big hurry. And part of it is that this is becoming an embarrassment to Obama's re-election campaign. But the other problem, again, is the logistical weakness. What happens if Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and some other Gulf states, and maybe Jordan, which could easily get sucked into this, what happens if you get revolutions starting in those countries? What does that do to the supply lines for these death squads inside Syria? So it seems to me there's a sense of urgency on the part of the NATO side. The other question is, how about some of these other places, right? Bahrain always deserves to be mentioned. There's a lot going on there the Western media don't talk about. There's Kuwait, the Emirates, Oman, and once again, Jordan. So all of these places, it seems to me, are actually ripe for real revolutions, which would probably aim at the overthrow of these outmoded, obsolete, royal dynasties that have been trampling on human rights there for so long.
Right, Mr. Mufid Jaber, a lot of people have been saying now that the ranks of those Syrians who did want reforms in the first place, or who still want it now and are desperately actually looking for it, they're slowly realizing that the uprising against President Assad has taken a new and a darker form, and that they cannot now trust this form of opposition, the militarized opposition, the foreign-backed opposition, because of the atrocities we're hearing about taking place. They can't trust that opposition to bring them what they've been looking for maybe originally in Syria. What do you think?
Yes, yes. The protests in Syria began with legitimate demands for political rights and economic rights, but they have turned into a completely different thing. One which is basically a struggle between the imperialist forces led by the U.S. and supported by Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Turkey and Israel covertly, and forces that are loyal to the resistance. It is no longer a question of political reforms. It has taken a completely different form. Now even those who opposed Assad and were even vehemently opposed to Assad during the entire reign of Hafez al-Assad and Bashar al-Assad, people who have lived outside of Syria for so many years, are now backing even reluctantly the Syrian government, because it is no longer, as I said, a problem of reforms. It is a war that is being waged on Syria in order to undermine its geopolitical position and its political as its position as a facilitator for the flow of weapons to the resistance in Lebanon. So this is a war that is being waged on the Syrian government, not because of its nature as a regime that doesn't provide any political freedoms, but as a regime that has always supported the resistance. And so now even those who oppose the Syrian regime are now coming to support it, facing those who have only recently defected to the opposition, by being offered financial incentives by Qatar and Saudi Arabia.
Right, Dr. Short, a lot of people, when they're speaking about what should be done, what's the solution for the current situation that Syria is facing, how should we attempt to try and stop this bloodshed? Some are saying that the comprehensive peace talks are required involving all regional players. Some are saying that political dialogue inside of Syria. But how practical do you think these solutions are going to be, and what role can Beijing and Moscow play in this kind of a solution?
Let me start at the top. The Chinese will be negligible because the Chinese really do believe, quite stupidly, that there's a nonviolent way to deal with the maniacal greediness of the Western imperialist powers. That's one. They should have learned that with the Opium Wars, that it's not done that way. As for the Russians, they really need to step up. The failure of the Russians to deliver the missile systems, the SS-300s, as well as other armaments to back up the Bashir regime, in as much as they don't have troops there, they need to keep their promise. It seems as if the Russians have a lot of mouth, but they don't have a backbone. Now, at the same time, there were about 12 nations, and takes Syria out, 11 nations that refused to vote against Syria, and 32 that abstained, or 31 that abstained. It seems as if those nations could come together and organize a peace force themselves, which would also necessarily involve Iran as a major stakeholder in this. This is not just about destroying Syria. It is about destroying the emerging new regional powers, of which Iran is number one in terms of its scientific abilities, and it having an ideological break with the economic system of central banks in the West. So these people need to come together and form a new United Nations, in as much as the one that exists seems to only serve capital and greed and war and genocide.
Right, we've just got under a minute time left. Dr. Tarpley, if you could very briefly tell us your view on this. The question I put to you earlier, do you think a political diplomatic solution right now for Syria is viable?
I have to say some of those ideas are very intriguing. Certainly the United Nations is now in a tremendous crisis, similar to the League of Nations when it was supporting aggression back in the 1930s. It seems to me now that the focus of this entire crisis shifts from being totally fixed on Syria to being more regional, right? You're talking about tensions between Turkey and Iraq, tensions between Turkey and Iran. You've got, again, this whole archipelago of revolutions that could break out in the Gulf. This would, I think, shift many elements of power, not even in the region, but in the world.
Right.
And it seems to me right now, the principal way that this might end is if the blowback becomes overwhelming. If Saudi Arabia goes into revolution, then you'll see the imperialists shift their assets to try to shore up the regime in Riyadh.
Thank you very much, Dr. Webster. Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, talking to us there live from Washington. I'd also like to thank our guest in Beirut, Mr. Mofid Jaber, with the Center for Middle East Studies and Public Relations, and in Washington again with the Baltimore chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. Randy Short. Thank you very much, and thank you for staying with another edition of News Analysis. From Miho Malesky, it's goodbye.